Let's get to the hotline, though, because we have our next guest waiting. Al Harris, our Hollywood guru, or as we've appropriately nicknamed him, Hollywood Harris, is on the hotline. Al, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are lovely, hoping that the rain stays away, and it's, boy, it's really, really hot. I'm not sure if it's hotter here than it is there, but, I mean, we're in the 90s, man. Are you guys relatively close?
Yeah. We're like mid-80s. You know, it's finally turned into L.A. weather, which has been nice. Finally, the rain subsided, and we're just getting sunny days now.
Well, speaking of sunny days, there are some very sunny days on the horizon for Will Smith. I was reading earlier today that Aladdin has now become Will Smith's highest-grossing film. It's crazy. I mean, is that any surprise to you that Aladdin has passed Independence Day as the highest-grossing film of Will Smith's career?
Yeah, but also you got to think about it. That was, what, almost 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or more than 20 years ago. So it's not crazy to believe, right, that a movie now would do better than a movie 20 years ago. I think if you look at it that way, and you have the built-in Disney aspect, and we've talked about this a million times, an existing IP that's going to do well. I am going to be shocked it's done as well as it has. I didn't realize it was the number one Will Smith movie of all time. That's kind of crazy. But I don't know if he really considers a Will Smith movie, right? He's kind of like the supporting cast. So I think a movie he's leading probably, you know, you can say it with a lot of people, like a lot of great actors, their most selling roles have been ones where they've taken like a supporting role. I'm not really surprised it's done as well as it has. I'm not surprised that it is his top movie. I feel like you're just asking that question because it is July 4th coming up.
Well, I mean, there's an easy opportunity I'm sure I could take there, but I'll bypass that. No, I read that, Al, and I was a little surprised that it became the highest grossing film in his career. And, I mean, you could also make the argument he kind of played a really strong supporting role in both movies, no? I mean, was he considered, like, the number one star in Independence Day? I mean, wouldn't you give that to Jeff Goldblum, or am I off base there?
Well, I'm actually surprised that, well, yeah, I don't know if I'd – he was, like, the breakout star of that movie. But, yeah, I would guess Bill Pullman would probably be the lead.
Okay.
But that being said – Bill Pullman or Goldblum. But that being said – I'm actually surprised that was his top grossing movie yet. Before this, I would have assumed it was Men in Black.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, too, because, you know, I knew Independence Day did extraordinarily well. I just didn't know that Aladdin was doing this well. I saw it with my wife a couple of weeks ago and thought it wasn't too bad. I know a lot of people didn't particularly love it, but I thought it was all right. But regardless, I want to move on to the box office present day. Toy Story 4 dominated once again, but it seemed like the movie Yesterday, which came in third, did way, way better than expected. Any idea why the critics liked this movie so much?
Well, what I've read, it's kind of like, you know, mid-tier reviews, but I think it did better than anticipated, and I think for the main reasons are, one, is it's becoming more and more, you know, the norm to not have really exciting movies coming out. It's biopics, it's superhero movies, it's remakes of Disney movies, it's sequels, it's that kind of stuff. Recently I've been, thanks to HBO Now, they have all the old John Grisham movies on there, so I've been watching a lot of those, and made me think why they don't make movies like that anymore. And they just don't make, like, unless superhero movie, it's very hard to make something made unless you have some sort of name attached. And Danny Boyle is that name. So Danny Boyle directing that, who already has, you know, is a very visually interesting director, has done, you know, everything from Slumdog Millionaire to Trainspotting. I don't know what the last big one he did that was really good was, you know, he's the Steve Jobs movie. He's a known entity, so, and he's someone that's always exciting to watch, which I think is one reason why the reviews have been like, or have done better than anticipated. And also, like I said originally, it's a different movie, right? It's actually something we haven't seen before. And it's also an excuse to use Beatles songs. So I think those three things are really is what led it to doing better than anticipated.
It's one of the few original movies that I think is really outright. I'm not to say Toy Story 4, it's a different story, but yeah, it's a sequel. It's something people have already kind of seen, and I think you and I touched on it too not long ago that everyone was doing the biopics, and this took the music aspect, bringing the Beatles' music to you in a different way than just saying, exactly, oh, here's a story about the Beatles.
Well, think about it now. Like right now in the theater, I wanted to go to the movies last weekend. My options were, you know, yesterday, Toy Story 4, sequel, Rocket Man, another biopic, Dark Phoenix, superhero movie, and this week we have what coming out, another big superhero movie in Spider-Man, and then a horror movie, Midsommar, which is supposed to be great. But that's, right now, horror is like the only genre that you can really do something different on, because horror sells no matter who you have casted and no matter really what the story is. So I think besides that, if you don't like horror and you don't want to see something you've seen before, right now yesterday's kind of your only option. Unless you go to like the art house theaters, which I know for a fact aren't as big in Cleveland as they are in Los Angeles.
Al Harris is our Hollywood guru. He joins us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And Al, I want to talk about a movie that's not coming out for a little while yet, but some news continues to leak about it. Boy, we saw something last Thursday that Paul Rudd is actually going to be a part of the next Ghostbusters cast. Got me a little excited. I'm at least intrigued to see what this newest Ghostbusters is going to be all about. Should we be excited about the fact that Paul Rudd is going to be at least a part of this movie?
Yes. What has Paul Rudd been in that hasn't been better because Paul Rudd's in it? Paul Rudd is like the comedy version of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right? You put The Rock in any action movie, it's going to be entertaining. You put Paul Rudd in any comedy, it's going to be pretty entertaining, even if the comedy's not good. I mean, he elevated Avengers, he elevated Civil War. He's just a very likable guy. And I think because of how, not bad, but how kind of forgettable the last Ghostbusters movie was, and I think part of that, a main part was that it just kind of like made its own thing and didn't really like build on the Ghostbusters of the past. And the fact that this one really kind of is, and you have, was it Ivan Reitman's son, the guy who directed the original Ghostbusters, his son is directing this. I like it. I like Jason Reitman. I don't know how he'll be at comedy. He hasn't really done much, but like full on comedy. But I'm excited for that pairing. Because he did Juno, but Juno wasn't really like a full-on laugh-out-loud comedy. So I think this is his first one. You have Bill Murray probably going to be in this one. Same with Sigourney Weaver. Aykroyd's already been attached. And they are bringing, you know, the kid from Stranger Things is the lead, and they're kind of like passing the torch. And I think Paul Rudd's a great addition. Like, I'm just, everything so far I've heard, I've been excited for. Now, if they can announce that Rick Moranis is going to be a part of it, dude, I am all in.
I like the analogy, first off, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because I agree with you. Everything he touches turns to gold, and you'd be hard-pressed to argue that, at least from the action point, I think. But really hitting that home. Nonetheless.
Sure. Right, yeah. Uh-huh. Far be it for you to miss that opportunity.
Yeah, I had to jump in on that. For those who don't
know. Dude, Hobbs & Shaw looks great, man. I'm all in on that one.
Yeah, no kidding. But no, I do think Paul Rudd. So I was watching over the weekend. I hadn't caught it yet, Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later. And I think what sets Paul Rudd apart from that cast of known comedians and big-time comedians now who have really made a name for themselves is the fact that he has kind of that dry sense of humor that's very unique to his approach.
Well, and it's not that, and I kind of already mentioned it, it's that dry humor, but he's also, it's very, he's very likable. Like, a lot of these comedians are acerbic, are very, like, even when they, like, in Wet Hot American Summer, he's kind of the only guy playing kind of a mean guy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to watch my language on the radio. But you know what I mean. And he, and he's still likable. And that's just, it's, you don't see a lot of actors that are just kind of have like that. I would even compare to like in the 30s, I'm dating myself, but like Cary Grant was extremely likable. And we don't really have a lot of likable actors anymore. Everyone likes to play the real moody, brooding type. But as far as Paul Rudd and everything he's in, he is likable. And I think that, especially when you have like something, you know, it's something that the audience can relate to. And I think that's why he's so good in so many things. He adds that aspect to it.
All right, Al, one last question for you before we get to the picks to click here. So I saw this pop up earlier today. The Truth Initiative released information that in a 2019 report, 92% of shows that attested as the most popular with ages 15 to 24 depicted tobacco use. Now, I think there are probably a lot of different angles that you could attack this from, but do you think this is a problem, or is this really not that big of a deal?
It's a loaded question. I think it could be seen both ways. I'm going to take the wuss's way out on this one. But besides that, I do think, so as someone who's, you know, produced some short films and some longer form stuff with tobacco use in it, it's a very easy way to portray someone as being, you know, on the wrong tracks or having a rough childhood. So when you're trying to do that without, like, you know, saying it, definitely alcohol and cigarettes are a way to really show that off. And I think, and because a lot of the characters in especially TV shows and in movies are, you know, your damaged anti-heroes, it's an easy way to show that. And so I think, as my personal opinion, as long as you aren't glorifying the cigarette smoke, I think it has a place in TV and movie. But if you are really showing, like, that it's cool to smoke and that, especially in something geared towards younger audiences, then it is an issue. So I think that number actually is pretty staggering, and I think that's way too high, but I understand why it's used, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That wasn't the wuss's way out. I think you explained that very, very well. I mean, if it's being done in a way that it portrays those that smoke in a negative fashion, trying to discourage those in that age range, 15 to 24, to smoke, then I think we're certainly on board. There's no question about that. That is a large number. I found that a little unusual that 92% of the shows that tested most popular with that age range, 15 to 24, thought that was extraordinarily high. But was just kind of curious to get your take on that. But
well, and you also have a lot of stuff like the period pieces, you know, where cigarette smoking was, everyone did it. So I understand why they do that as well. So, like, you know, in the Mad Men's and that kind of stuff. So it just, it all depends. Like, you don't see, like, Disney shows and Nickelodeon shows doing it, which I agree shouldn't be, but I guess the most popular, it makes sense to me.
Fair enough. Al, I appreciate the explanation. We appreciate the time, but we're not letting you go before we find out what the picks to click are for this week, because yes, most of us will be outside barbecuing, having a great time with the 4th of July holiday. But if it rains, we need a backup plan. If it rains and everybody's stuck inside, what kinds of things should we be watching?
Well, this is going to be I'm phoning it in this week. I'm going to make it real simple. Because you ask anyone, they're all going to give you the same answer. But Stranger Things comes out July 4th. Perfect thing to watch if it's rainy out. It's getting better reviews than the last season. Everyone's saying it's great. Cary Elwes is in it. So if you're a fan of the 80s and Princess Bride, that's awesome. Yeah, so just stay in and watch Stranger Things. I wasn't a huge fan of the second season. And I wasn't a huge fan of the first season. I was entertained by watching it. I thought that they had some issues. But I'm never not entertained watching it, and I'm excited for this season, too. So it's definitely something to do on the long weekend if you want to hunker inside.
Good stuff. Well, Al, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time. Have an explosive 4th of July holiday, my friend, and we'll do this again next week.
All right, sounds great.
Thanks, Al. Again, Al Harris, our Hollywood insider, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. He says Stranger Things, that's your go-to on the 4th of July if your party does end up getting a little bit rain.